हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर शिवसनि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 24. Srila Prabhupada quotes the current Sutra 216 and explains in his purport. The Vedic statements are self-evident. Whatever is stated therein must be accepted. If we interpret according to our own imagination, the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost. Right? So the whole idea is that the Vedas are about Krishna, and that understanding of Krishna that's coming to us from the Acharyas. And so how they give the understanding, that's how we see it. Right? So the whole point is that the aspect of hermeneutics, it has to be parampara. And if it's coming from someone's own speculation, our own or someone else, and we're following that, then, as it says, the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost. Because then it's not about what the Veda is saying that we have to do, it's what we think we should be doing. We may be using the Veda to support us, but that's the way all, basically, political things work. Right? Self-centered or political things is that we'll accept whatever we like from something, and everything else we won't. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, the African saying, it takes a village to raise a child. So from that, everyone will be very happy, very inspired and all that, but will they take other things from an African village? Probably not. So in other words, they just pick and choose what they like from here and there and put that together into their own unique blend. So who's the authority? It's not the African village. It's not something that Plato said or something that someone else said or, you know, like that. You understand? It's going to be Sid Vicious or something. You know, it's not going to be any of these kind of things. It's going to be based on what we like. Does that make sense?
It's me, so mind.
Yes, our mind. So the mind, so that's why it says the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost, because it's imagination, it's our own mind. Does that make sense? Yeah. Out of four main types of evidence, direct perception, hypothesis, historical reference, and the Vedas. Vedic evidence is accepted as the foremost. If we want to interpret the Vedic version, we must imagine an interpretation according to what we want to do. First of all, we set forth such an interpretation as a suggestion or hypothesis. As such, it is not actually true. And the self-evident proof is lost. You understand? Because this is the ascending process. Right? Where was that? Direct perception will start by something I see. Then, based on what I see, we'll make a hypothesis. So where's the authority of that? So it's just our mind. So then, it doesn't matter what the historical reference of the Vedas are, because if it's in line with our hypothesis, we'll accept it, and if it's not, we'll reject it. So that's what we see Yoga and Shankya are doing. They're starting the other way around. It's not a descending process. Right? Because you have to start from the Vedic evidence itself. The Vedas itself, so the Shruti, then the historical reference, that's the Smriti, then the hypothesis, that's given to us by the Acharyas, like that. Then we have the direct perception of ourselves, how we apply it in our life. So Manu says it has to go the other way. Right? Does that make sense? And so that's how human beings work. So that's Manu defines it that way.
Direct perception is how we apply, and then we get to decision.
Yes, but the point is you've started from the Veda and come down. Mm-hmm. If you go backwards, then it's the ascending process, so it'll always be faulty. It doesn't really get past hypothesis. Because only the historical reference in the Vedas will only be in support of our hypothesis. Right?
Yeah.
If it agrees. If it doesn't agree, then, you know, then we come up with some reason why it doesn't. We chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, or, you know, it's Kali Yuga, or it's a contemporary age, it's not, you know, 500 years ago like Lord Chaitanya, or 100 years ago like Srila Prabhupada, or like this, so therefore we have to do things different, we're modern, we're, you know, we're special, we're unique, we're the cat's meow, you know, all these kind of things like that. Does that make sense? So that's all the things that's how we'll do it. And so the point is it has to start from the Veda and then comes down. The Vedic statements are self-evident. We don't understand this because we don't have the realization.
Actually, even the modern education is completely based on this ascending,
yes,
which is completely,
yes,
so wrong.
Yes, the modern is totally based on the ascending. That's why it never really gets past hypothesis. Means if the historical reference of the Vedas will support it, they don't mind quoting it. But at another time, they won't quote it. You know. Yes.
So when you say they start from the end, it means from the senses.
They're starting from the direct perception, starting with themselves and how they perceive things, their field of action. Then from that, then they come up with a hypothesis on, you know, what's their philosophical take on things. Then, now, if historical reference or Vedas will support that, then all well and good.
Convenient.
Yeah, it's convenient. That's a good word for it. It's convenient. But if it doesn't, then they'll come up with some other contrived convenience why it's not useful. So that's the whole point, is that it's not real. That's why it says human life starts with the platform of Manamoy, where we accept the Veda. We accept Varnashram. So the Veda says, so we do it in the reverse way. So we see is that culturally, then we see all the followers of the Veda, then they're human in that they accept the cultural aspects of it, you know, and accept the Veda as the principle. But because we see is that they're still working in the ascending process and the descending, it's still not actually properly what human life is for. Because human life should get you God consciousness. And so if it doesn't, then... You know, and if you're making it up yourself, it won't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Out of the so now, if you take it the other way, you start with the Vedic version, right? What the Veda says. Then we look at the history, right? What the great personalities, like what Bhagavatam is saying, like that. Then you see then how it is being explained, or the hypothesis as it's given by the Acharyas. That's coming in Parampara. Then we take that, apply that in our life. That's where you're talking about. Through Manana, where we contemplate, we practice, then we get realization. Then in the direct perception, we actually directly perceive what the Veda has said. Yes.
It's kind of like the banyan tree in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Where it talks about how from the end of the banyan tree, you can't find the source.
Yes. Because the branches are going, yes, it's just the way it's designed. You can't, because you can only function, you can only perceive within the material world, and it's so complicated you won't find it. Even if you try to follow that, you still won't get there. You know, it's just like that. You may be able to count all the grains of sand in the universe, or like that, but you'll never be able to understand the Lord.
Even the opposition, they have their Vishaya-Vakya from the Vedic Vedas only.
They're using the Vishaya-Vakya, but how did they get to that Vishaya-Vakya? How did they get to that Vedic quote? They started there, or they ended there?
They ended there.
So it's still what do you call it? Aroha, right?
Arohya.
No. You have Aroha, Aviroha.
Avaroha.
Huh?
Avaroha means to up.
Avaroha is up? Aroha is not up?
Lighting down.
Oh, well, whatever it is, it's the going up path. So it's just out of convenience it's ended in the Veda. Because they're following the Veda culture, everyone else is quoting the Veda, and they can find what they want from the Veda, so... You know, like we said, is that you have that Bhagavad Gita verse, Karmanyeva Dikadaste, you have the right to perform your duty, but the rest of the verse is never quoted, and no other verses are quoted. Right? You know, unless it supports their philosophy that I can just, you know, do my karma and get my results and enjoy that. Does that make sense? So this is the ascending process.
They do quote another verse.
Sorry?
They quote another verse. I told you everything now you do, whatever you like.
Oh, yeah, they just quote the part, now you do whatever you like. Yes. You have a right to perform your duty and now you do whatever you like. complete Gita. Right?
As it is.
Yeah, the essence. As I want it.
We have one verse in our college, Yoga Karma Sukaushalam. Your karma is divine, like their interpretation.
Is divine like. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so we're good on that. So that's what's happening, is all these six schools are going up, not down. So that's the problem. They may accept more a broader range of the Vedic verses, like in Mimamsa and Purva Mimamsa, but Uttari Mimamsa. But they're not starting from the Lord and coming down to the Parampara. So you only see that in the four Sampradayas. So only they can give you actual truth, right? So because it says you have to get it from someone who's seen the truth. Now they'll say that, okay, Patanjali here has seen the truth, but where did he get it from? Right? So it wasn't that he got it from someone who's seen the truth. No, he's just himself seeing. So that means it starts from perception. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point, is it goes back, but then it ends. It doesn't go back to Krishna. Okay? Srila Madhvacharya, commenting on the aphorism Drishyate 2, Vedanta Sutra 216, quotes the Bhavishya Purana as follows. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Mahabharata, Pancharatra, and original Ramayana are all considered Vedic literature. The Puranas, such as the Brahma Vivarta Purana, Naradiya Purana, Vishnu Purana, and Bhagavat Purana, are especially meant for Vaishnavas and are also Vedic literatures. As such, whatever is stated within the Puranas, Mahabharata and Ramayana is self-evident. There's no need for interpretation. The Bhagavad Gita is also within the Mahabharata. Therefore, all the statements in the Bhagavad Gita are self-evident. There's no need for interpretation. And if we do interpret, the entire authority of the Vedic literature is lost. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 6.137. Okay, so Sri Govinda Bhashya. Siddhanta. The word tu indicates a refutation of the doubt. The word na is understood from Sutra 214. Oh, no, I just figured it out. No, but I'm saying whenever someone goes, but, I just do the same thing back after they finish, but. Okay. The word tu indicates a refutation of the doubt. The word na is understood from Sutra 214. It is not true that Brahman cannot be the material cause because of difference, since we see there is difference of cause and effect in this world. We see appearance of qualities different from the original substance. We see worms arising from honey and elephants and horses arising from a desire tree. We see gold arising from Chintamani. The Atharva Vanikas give the following example to illustrate this. Yatorna nabhi shri jate grinate cha yata priti vyam oshadaya sambhavanti yata shantaf purushat kesh lobani tata sharat sambhavati ha visham. Just as the spider produces and withdraws its thread, just as the herbs arise from the earth, just as hairs arise from a man, so the universe arises from the imperishable Lord. Mundakya Upanishad 117. Right? So we see all these things that are very different. You know, so that's the whole point, is that to just use the thing that there's a difference, then they can't say that that's the point, because there's also similarities. So if they say there's not enough similarities, but then so many things in this world, then there's not similarities. So the whole point is that's not how it works. The Veda says that in the same way, so that's how we see that everything arises from the Lord. It's different, but it still comes from the Lord. Right? Because it's the transformation of his energies. So he has all the energies as the energetic, the energies transform. So therefore we see that there's a difference. Because if there wasn't a difference, then we wouldn't we wouldn't get that same effect. Right? But that difference is a transformation of the energy. So you still can view them if you know how to look. Right? If you know what to look for, you can find that common point. They're just looking for different common points. So they're not finding them. Bhagavatam verse reference. 10:87:26. The three modes of material nature comprise everything in this world. From the simplest phenomena to the complete, complex human body. Although these phenomena appear real, they are only a false reflection of the spiritual reality, being a superimposition of the mind upon you. Right, so it's a false reflection of that. Why is it false? It means reflection is there, but false means it's not working according to the original. Like you, let's say you see yourself in the mirror. We'll say it's a true reflection because what you do is what it does. So it's following the original. But here it's not considered a true reflection because it has all the elements of the spiritual world, but we're using them as we please, not how they would naturally be used in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Yes.
This expression, superimposition of the mind, means that mind makes it like we feel it's like real.
The mind gives what is the reality. So that's why we'll say it's not real. We're not saying that the reflection or the phenomena is not there. We'll say it's a reflection in its own. But the point is because what we attribute to it, therefore it becomes false. Because what do you see? You know, it's just like you have 20 people and there's one event. You talk to each one of those separately, you'll get basically 20 different events. There may be some commonalities between some of them and this and that, so you can group them and that. But the point is you'll get 20 different events because of their values.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's not about the facts, but it will be...
Yeah, that's the whole point. For us, we talk facts. But why do we want facts? Because from facts means from what you can perceive, then we'll make our hypothesis.
Yes.
So when nowadays people talk about truth, they don't want to know truth because truth descends. They just want to have a fact, something I can perceive with my senses, in which I can make a hypothesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they'll call their hypothesis truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll say, oh, you did this. Oh, so then this is what, it's like what Ramachandra Puri, was it? You know, he sees ants in Lord Chaitanya's room. So you're a sannyasi and you're eating rock candy. You know, this is nonsense. So it means there is ants there. But as Lord Chaitanya said, ants are everywhere. You know, he's made that wherever you go, there's ants. You know, so just because there's ants, so he's from his direct perception of the ants, he's come up with a hypothesis that ants, walk around looking for sugar, and so that they're here means they found sugar. Why would they find sugar? That's because Lord Chaitanya has been eating it, and then he is the sannyasi, shouldn't be eating that. Therefore, then he's not a proper sannyasi. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It could be something else that they're there. There's a dead bug on the floor, and they're coming there to eat that. Or someone else came in the room and ate rock candy. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is when we say we want to know the truth, we want it transparent, it doesn't mean that it's coming down the transparency. It means that you're giving things without your opinion, without your perception on it. So it's transparent. So that means... It's like a clear liquid that has no flavor or smell. Now I can give whatever flavor and smell I want to it. Well, if it already comes with something, then I have to fight with that to get it to my hypothesis. You know what I'm saying? So you should be totally submissive to like that, and I'll be totally independent. So we see it's not a very elevated position. It's not, even though it's talked as a nice social platform, it's not at all. You know, that it's liberal, it's accommodating, it's actually the exact opposite. You know, we're not saying that the conservative is liberal and accommodating either. But what we're saying is mundane perceptions aren't actually accommodating. You know, so that's the whole point. Only the spiritual vision, now that has broad-mindedness. Otherwise, everything else is just a different variety of the same thing. You know, it's like wet stool and dry stool. You say it's different, but it's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, the fresh cow dung, you know, that's the thing. You know, we're the fresh cow dung party because that's the real thing, because that you can put in the garden, you can grow things, you can do everything like that. So that's the real thing like that. And then the other party is, no, we're the dry cow dung, you know, party, because, you know, okay, nice, you can do all that, but even you grow all that, what's the point if you can't cook it? So we're the dry cow dung party. We can make fires. We can cook the things. We can actually nourish you. The other thing is a nice concept, but we're the real thing. You know, as if the two don't go together. So that's the whole point, is that the points that they're pointing out is the actual broadness, both. It's not a compromise. Because compromise means you're taking the external form of both and then trying to make that, you know, kind of work. So you're giving up on one thing and a little bit of the other, so you kind of mutually give up. No, the Vedic is that both can be in their natural position. You get rid of what's the weak parts. You know what I'm saying? So you're not compromising on the good parts, you're compromising on the weak parts, because you don't want the weak parts. So it has that full things of both, but it doesn't have that nature that I'm controller and enjoyer. That's left out of the Vedic version. That's why it's not appreciated. It's not because it's harder to understand as that, just nobody wants that. Right? The modern allows you to be the controller and enjoyer. The Vedic doesn't. You know? And so basically it's that I'm the controller and enjoyer with no restriction other than what I say. Or you have the conservatives, is you can be the controller and enjoyer within a context that everybody, you know, is a tradition, rather than just a contemporary can keep changing every few months, like that. So in other words, whatever a group says, that becomes the tradition. So it's just one group changes tradition very quickly, and the other one is lasting for generations. That's the difference. Right? But the Vedic is not about what people say, it's about what the scripture says, what God says, what the Acharyas say. And so that doesn't allow for I'm the controller and enjoyer. There I'm the servant. My duty is to please Krishna. So that's the point that makes it so it's not understood. Not that it's so technically difficult. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm sorry to digress a little bit, but I have a question on what we just read above. It said, it talks about how it's not true that Brahman cannot be the material cause because of difference, and so see this difference of cause and effect in this world. I'm wondering why they use, because they're trying to refute what was just stated by the other philosophers. So they use examples that are very esoteric.
No, they just use examples where it works for them, because other Vedic examples they're not using. That's what we're saying. They only will take those verses that support their philosophy, and those that don't, they ignore them.
Right, but I mean, when they
so because of that, they say the Veda can't be the authority. Our scripture has to be the authority.
Right, but why wouldn't they use examples that are common knowledge? Because they say that
because the common knowledge ones support the Veda, not what they say.
No, I'm saying
it's just—it's just like let us say
the Vedas use these examples. Like they talk about horses arising from a desire tree, and it says we see gold arising from Chintamani. I mean, who sees gold arising from Chintamani?
No, but if you start with the Vedas, then you know that that's what goes on.
Okay, but to be able to accept those examples, you have to accept the Vedas.
Yes, but these people are ones that say they accept the Vedas. Mm-hmm. So they're saying they accept the Vedas, so the Veda says this, so why aren't you accepting? So they actually don't accept the Vedas. Because if you give something else, then they'll always say, oh, but here's the comment, here's the... Point is, it's like a greased pig. You know, can you catch it? You know, it's very difficult. It means it always wiggles out. Whatever you catch them on, they'll wiggle out and come use a different perspective. See, that's the thing, is when you're dealing with the traditional things, they have a particular perspective. And so then it's easier to deal with. But the less they do that, the more they just change positions. You know, it's like, you know, the thing changing the goalposts. You know, things like that. It's whatever you say, then they'll pick... If you've proven what they've said wrong from their example, they'll pick a different one. You know, like I said the other day, I said is, you know, Lord Chaitanya is saying that we must be humble, we must be tolerant, respect others, not live for respect for ourselves. So that tolerance actually comes from forgiveness. So what you can't forgive, that's what you're intolerant of. So you have to become forgiving to become tolerant. So that's why then the forgiveness is the foremost quality of a Brahmin. That's how he's able to maintain all those nice qualities. So then somebody, you know, brings up a doubt that, you know, but how can I forgive if this person comes and kills my son and this and that? How can I ever forgive? It's like, you know, is that what's happening in your life? That's what's holding you back from pure devotional services. You know, every day you go out and they kill your son again, you know, like that. And, you know, I'm saying, is that what's happening? No, it's that they didn't say hello when you looked at them, or how they didn't say hello the way you wanted them to or expected them to, because of who you are and, you know, who they are. And, you know, this is what's the reality. But that's not what's said, because if you use those examples, then it makes them look, you know, uncultured. But if they say the person's come, he's killed my son, how can I, you know, this and that. It's like, who's got that problem? Right? You know, who has that problem? Okay, Vishwamitra and Vishishta, okay, we have that problem. Right? I think he killed 99 of his 100 sons, or killed all 100, I don't remember which. Anyone remembers? Whatever it is.
100.
Killed all 100. Killed 100 sons. He arranged this Rakshasa and all that, and the Rakshasa, then when they all came, you know, home, crossing the bridge, then the Rakshasa caught them and ate them all. Right? And still he can forgive. So that's 100 sons. That's why it's there. Because otherwise we'll say, no, but my son, you know, this and that.
He tried to commit suicide, though.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't mean that he's not forgiving. Like that. But my point is that we'll always use these extreme examples that have really nothing to do with reality. And then if you catch them on that, then they'll switch to the other side, you know, because here it's my right. And then when you show that, oh, but I'm the victim. And then when you show that, no, but, you know, we have to be, you know, they'll just switch positions. Whatever is supportive of their philosophy, it has nothing to do with actually understanding the absolute truth.
Their argument is that because Brahman is different than things in this world, therefore this world can't come from Brahman.
Yes, but they can't see what's common. Because the point is everything here is energies. And we see the energies here transform. Earth is transformed into the bricks. Earth is transformed into the mortar. You know, so all the things, that's all transformation of earth. So you can still see, but it means you look at this pillar, you don't see this nice countryside and, you know, rolling, you know, southern France countryside and stuff like that. You know, it's just not there. You know, so in that way, if you can say, no, but it doesn't look like a nice rolling hill, then you can say it's not the same, so it can't come from the hill. So you're just choosing which way of looking at it. If you say, no, it's got the certain aspects of earth, that, you know, that the element of the density being able to support those things of the earth, then you can see it. So as they just choose those qualities that support their philosophy that are different, because transformation means there's a difference. So they just focus on what's different, not on what's the same.
Right, but I still don't understand how these examples are going to refute their arguments, because they can't relate to them, because they're not...
You can't relate to them. You can't say they're not going to relate to them.
I mean, the people from a different philosophy.
Yeah, you can't say they're not going to relate to them. That's why I hear Mundaka Upanishad. As a spider produces and withdraws its thread, the thread is the spider. How many legs on a thread? How many eyes on the thread? can the thread, you know, put out the thread and pull back the thread? No, it can't do any of that. So in that way, they're different. But the point is the thread is non-different from
right,
the spider.
That's a common example.
But that's from the Mundaka Upanishad.
Right.
So that's why he says here, the Atharvavanikas give the following example to illustrate this. But he's showing a more extreme example is that, you know, all these different things are there. There's more, you know, so he calls, you know, the, what do you call it? Scorpions arising from a pile of rice.
Right.
You know, so there's all these different things that it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So they're just showing that is there and then giving that this one, which then they can, so, because this one specifically says just like that,
right.
Then it goes.
Okay.
So.
Can you say that those, especially those who like to philosophize and speculate, they don't like common examples because it puts them as ordinary people, but they are special?
Yeah, that's also there. Yeah. So you have to give something more wild. Like that. You know, so as wild as what they give, you have to give. But actually, if you can be more wild than them, it's better. Because then they get bewildered. Yes?
Can we say that everything we think, speak, or do, it's according to our value system?
It's according to our value system. That's why if we bring our value system in line with what the Shastra says, then whatever we do then takes up that natural transcendental position.
Right. So what is the basis of the value system?
Means the realization of the benefit of it. Because you've contemplated it, you've practiced it, you've seen the results. And so with time then you start to see that this result is of value, therefore this activity is what gets that result, therefore that activity is done.
Okay. It's from the past.
It's from one's experience, but the point is if it's based on the mind, then it'll be faulty. If it's based on Shastra, then it won't be faulty. So that's the whole point, is the Vedic authority, then the values that it gives, that's the actual way you're supposed to look at it. So we may have other aspects that, no, I want more for myself, or what about myself, and all that. But what do they mean by self? How are they defining self? Because self can mean the soul, can mean the intelligence, the mind, or the senses. Right? So the intellectuals is always going to be the intelligence. Right? The devotees, it'll be the soul. You know, but for the karmis, it'll be that, you know, the mind, the senses, the body, it'll be that aspect. You know, because they're not the body, then they're the soul, then they don't have a problem with, by good karma, I can get a better body, and I can use my intelligence. So we see these two aspects are used to support the lower. On the Vedic, the lower ones are used to support the higher. So dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are used to support bhakti. Not bhakti is used to support dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So the intent is actually so that's what you see. What do you want to gain? So that's why someone can follow the Veda and it's about dharma. Someone can follow the Veda, it's about liberation. Someone can follow it, it's about bhakti. But the point is, bhakti, you get the facility and you get liberated. So it already includes the other two. The karma doesn't include liberation. Liberation doesn't include karma. Only bhakti includes them both. So
without the, let's say, the mercy of the devotee, we cannot go to the devotional life.
Yes. Without the mercy of the devotee. Because when that's there, then Krishna being pleased and reveals the benefit. Krishna will put you in contact when you become inquisitive. But you still have to make that commitment. When you do, then Krishna reveals.
So is the value system.
Yes, then the value thing. Because then you see the higher principle, the spiritual value, you know, the spiritual benefit. Then your values change to that, so you give up the lower. That's why it said, Krishna says, someone tastes, by tasting a higher taste, they give up the lower. Right. So that's the point. Once one tastes bhakti, then these other lower tastes aren't very interesting. So.
When we are saying, people say they want truth, but they are only looking for facts.
Yes.
So does it mean facts means it is only external and...
Facts means stuff I perceive by the senses, and that and it's the agreed upon perception of the senses. Because it's not even actually the fact, meaning just what it is objectively. Because that won't support their argument. It's their subjective interpretation of the facts that they'll call fact. You know, it's just like so much times someone's having a conversation, and then one person says something, so the other one says, "So you're saying this?" And they're saying, "No, I'm not saying that." "No, but you..." You know. So all it is they said a particular set of words, and within those words, you interpret it differently than how they are. And therefore, you give a different meaning. So that's called chala. You transform, or you shift the meaning.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying, you know, it's used as joking and stuff. That works nice, but when you use it, you know, otherwise, politically and economic, then it's not good. Like you say, "Wow, that's cool. Well, actually, it's quite warm today," you know. You know, so like that, you can use that as a joking thing. But if you're having a serious discussion, then you know, how are they going to function? Because whatever you say, they'll interpret it differently. So there is no such thing. But everybody's talking about the fact and truth and transparency and all this kind of seemingly nice things. But fact means its connection to Krishna. Transparency means it's coming in parampara. Truth means it's about and revealing the nature of Krishna and his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. You know, revealing devotional service. But that's not what it's meant when we say truth, fact, and transparency. We mean political, economic gain or loss. So that's why it says it's not real. It's existing, but it's not real. Just like a dream exists, but it's not real. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when we deal with the people, like in preaching or
people,
because what we say, they don't have idea sometimes. So it becomes very hard, like, to convince, to tell them what we mean.
Yeah, but you have to. That's the whole point. Is that how they perceive? That's the area that you talk from. Because for us, because it's all come from Krishna, we can connect it back to Krishna. So, any field of action that they're working within, we can find the usefulness within that. Does that make sense? You know, because the point is, you come down to the universal form is what everything is made of, and so that all comes from Krishna. So then. Then what it is, their area still is functioning on the same principles, because humans, living entities, always are looking for eternity, eternal happiness.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of what external form or secondary form they're using to gain that, you know, and the methods that they use. Does that make sense? So they have an identity, they have a method, they have a result, and the whole idea is that eternally they'll be happy. That's what everybody's looking for. So then, how does that work? Depending on what they're working with, then they have their particular philosophy to support that. So by the discussion, then you figure that out. And then you speak from that area, and that way give examples from something they can relate to. And then once they can understand it, then it starts to work. Still, those who know the Supreme Self consider the entire material creation to be real in as much as it is non-different from the Self. Right? So it's non-different from Krishna, that's why it's real. And the transformations is always because of Krishna's laws, so that's real. But how people perceive it and how they try to use that for their own purposes, that's what's not real. What we mean by not real, it has nothing to do with the Self, so it won't satisfy, you know, the us as self, right? Because unless it's in connection with the Supreme Self, it's not going to satisfy the self. Right? So, yeah. Just as things made of gold are indeed not to be rejected, since their substance is actually gold, so this world is undoubtedly non-different from the Lord who created it and then entered within it. So gold's not rejected because it comes from the Lord. So we use the gold in the Lord's service. Now to take the gold and use it in our service, now that's where the illusion comes up. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So that's where we say when it's for us, that's where it's unreal. Because who's this us? Us is the soul, but all what we're using is for the body. Right? You know, you put on gold ornaments, it makes the soul look so good, right? Yeah, it makes the soul happy. You know, but what it is, it's dealing with the body. So it's not real, because the soul is identifying with the body looks better, and so by our perception, and so therefore then we say, you know, we're happy, but that's not real. Because it's not actually connecting the soul to the Lord. Right? But not when it's seen in connection with the Lord, then it gives a different effect. That's real. So that's what I mean. It's everything's coming from the Lord, so it's not to be rejected. It's just a matter, is it within our capacity? Right? Is it within our, like say, Grihastha, does he reject gold?
No.
Okay. But a brahmachari, then he's not, he rejects it, but he won't use it for himself. It'll be given to the deities or something else like that. Because he won't in any way deal with it, right? But for the Grihastha, then they find various ways that it can be engaged in the Lord's service, directly or indirectly. Like that. So it's not rejected, it's just engaged according to what's the position. So, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-44. Thus the yogi can be in the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya, who presents herself as both the cause and effect of this material manifestation is therefore very difficult to understand. Right? So she presents herself that way, but in actuality that's what the Maya is, because she's not the cause. But she presents herself as that way because that's how people want to see. All materialists, whether they're karmis or jnanis, they want to define the material energy as the cause and effect. Because that just makes their philosophy work so much better. Because otherwise, if she's not the cause and effect, then what does that mean? It means then God's the cause and effect, and that means then we have a connection to God and gotta follow His laws. And that's the last thing we want to do. So therefore, then, you know, it's much better if material energy is the cause and effect, because now I can do whatever I want.
Because she is unconscious, so she will not affect
us.
We can do what?
Oh, it means because she's unconscious. Yeah, that's there. Yeah, I think they're taking it back to Pradhan. Yeah, because they generally don't talk about Maya herself.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, we're good. Sutrakar points out that Adhikarnas 4-5 establish Brahman as the first cause, thereby refuting the opponent's dogma of nothingness and particle theories. Adhikarna 4. Nothingness is not the first cause. Asa, dviti, no, ditya, dikaranam. Sutra reference 2:1, 7-11. Adhikara Prakashita. The atheistic Shankya philosophers think that because the nature of the Supreme Lord is different from the nature of the universe, and because the qualities of the Supreme Lord are not visible within the universe, the Lord cannot be the material cause of the universe. The Vedantists say in return that a wet lump of clay is different from a clay pot, yet it is the material cause of the pot, because both share the same essential ingredient. Similarly, although the names and forms of the universe are asat, the universe essentially does not exist as the energy of the sat, or does exist as the energy of the sat. Thus, it is a real effect of a real cause. It was previously proved by the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 1:4-15. Sama Karshanat. That sat actually refers to the Supreme Brahman, who is one without a second. Okay. It is illogical to demand that the attributes of a cause be completely replicated in its effect. Similarly, the universe does not display all the attributes of its material cause. Right? So the material itself, even in its transformations, doesn't show all the qualities. So in the same way as the universe doesn't necessarily have to be showing all the qualities of the Lord, all the qualities here. But there's something common. That's the point that has to be seen. Similarly, the universe does not display all the attributes of its material cause, the Supreme Lord. Formally is established by the Sutrakara in Vedanta Sutra 1427, Yonischa Higiyate, that the Lord is the material cause because the scriptures describe the Lord as the womb of the created beings. Right? So he's the cause because it's from him that they're all coming. Right? From there that they're generated. From there the whole process of the universe is going on. Right, so that whole aspect of primary creation, that's coming from the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right, so that means that's why he's the womb of the universe. Yes.
When it says he's the material cause, does that mean that from Pradhan?
Means he's the cause of the material. Means he's the original cause. Then you have means we're only dealing here cause and effect. So just we have the origin and then it's you know effect or it's transformation. But if you get into technical detail, causation has four aspects. You have the original cause, the formal cause, the material cause, and the instrumental cause. Right? So because of that, then there, when you get into that finer point, it's easier to see. But then you have to be able to accept that the Lord has energies, because he's the original cause. His energies, spiritual energies, are the formal cause. The transformation of them is the material cause. And then the living entities are the instrumental cause. They object that if the Supreme Lord is indeed the material cause of the universe, that is defective by its being temporary, ignorant, and miserable, then logic forces us to conclude that he will be tainted with these defects when he absorbs the universe into himself at the time of devastation. This objection is invalid because the Supreme Lord is transcendental, right? So even he's transcendental, so he'll be unaffected because it's his energy anyway. Now, if they're accepting that all the creation will be absorbed into him, then the point is, why would it be absorbed if it's different from him? And if it can be absorbed into him, then the point is, this as it's temporary, means it has to again manifest from him. So just their argument here then defeats itself. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, why are they bringing this point that they're saying no, but he can't be because when this contaminated thing, if it absorbs into him, he'll become contaminated. But the point is if it can be absorbed into him, then that means, how is that? And then it comes out again. That means he has to be unaffected. Otherwise, he keeps doing this. After a while, then he's just going to turn into material energy, and then it'll be eternal because it won't have to manifest again. Or it'll eternally be unmanifest because it merged into him, and now he can't function and manifest things again. He's saying, so they just come up with this thing. And from the first hearing, it sounds okay if you don't analyze. That's the trick of using the mind. That's why I was saying it's mental speculation. It sounds logical to the mind, not necessarily intelligence, to the mind. Because mind just accepts and rejects. So by saying this, you immediately either accept or reject. It's not that you're analyzing and reasoning. That's the intelligence. Right? So when we say intellectuals and that means that they're using their intelligence maybe in a more voluminous way to come to their subjective, you know, mental concoction. While other people don't necessarily use that step so much. Like the animals don't go through a big analytical thing. Does that make sense? It's not that the mouse goes by and the cat goes, well, by analysis there, okay, then small, furry, you know, tail with no fur on it, because other animals have fur on their tails. And then they have pink ears and little pink nose and funny whiskers and a long pointy face. So by analysis, then this must put them into the rodent family. And then of rodents being very small like this, so either it's a baby badger or something, but they also have hair on their tail, so it can't be a badger. So the only thing that it could possibly be in this case, you know, walking here, is a mouse. And so therefore mice then, you know, are there, and they are then myself being a cat, you know, by all the appearances that are there, then the cat's, you know, natural propensity is therefore chasing after mice and all that. So therefore I should perform my appropriate duty and chase after this mouse if I can ever catch it, because I've been thinking now for the last 1 minute and he's gone. Right? No, they just see and just go. So it's just a matter of whether we're more animalistic or use a little bit more intelligence. But the point of the subjectivity of the mind is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. That's all. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
we've seen sometimes people, they're somewhat intelligent, but not intelligent enough. Mm-hmm. So they're caught in the middle. And this apparently happens to this group.
Yes.
That they don't take it far enough, but somehow they have obvious, you know,
yes,
analytical intelligence.
Yes.
So then how can we
we deal?
Yeah.
We analyze things, because that's why you see when Prabhupada came to the West, then he uses logic a lot. Because it because of the scientific kind of basis of the modern society, or at least the saying that that's the basis of society, then that intellectual kind of analytical approach is appreciated. So we don't necessarily start with explaining that it's Shastra, we just logically explain what Shastra says. And so the logic of it makes sense, then we can take them back to the scripture. But it's not an ascending process, because we're bringing it down, but they don't understand. So we're just bringing what the Shastra says down to whatever position they're at and explaining it there, rather than giving the whole background and bringing it down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of analyzing. So how the Acharyas are approaching it here, this is then what works. You just have to find what kind of intellectual they are, therefore then what kind of examples and, you know, to use in your logical presentation. You know, what words, you know, so if they're logical and politically correct, that makes it more difficult. If it's politically correct, that's, you know, you can't really use logic. And if they're logical and not politically correct, that makes it easier. And now if they're logical and not practical, that also is a difficulty. Now if they're logical and practical, then that's your easiest. You know, and if they're logical, practical, and politically correct, then, you know, you can emphasize the logical and practical, and then that will slowly, you know, whittle away at the politically correct. Does that make sense? So you're using logic, it's just that you just have to be careful to see what the field is. So in the conversation, then ideally you can catch, you know, what kind of direction, what kind of words they use, and how they respond to things. And then from there, then you can proceed.
Yeah, because there's some taste in the logical argumentation, but eventually we have to drop logic for the higher taste.
Yes, that's why there's a difference in presentation when you're discussing with devotees and you're discussing with karmis. Mm-hmm. So with karmis, you're trying to bring them to the point of faith. And with the devotees, then you're cultivating that faith. Mm-hmm. So now, even within devotees, you'll have, basically, you can say, different levels.
Right.
So the first level will be that anartha nivriti, where they're trying to get rid of anarthas that, you know, tend to bring the focus on themselves. And only when all these things are answered, they themselves can be comfortable in devotional service. Then those who have that solid faith, and so then you can cultivate, you know, the devotional practice itself and that devotional taste. Right? Because when one's steady, then you get taste. It means it's not that you don't get a taste from devotional service before, but it's not by volume enough you call it taste. You know? Does that make sense? You know, if I bring out one grain of rice and put it on your plate, it is rice, but you wouldn't call it rice, you know, because rice means a pile of that. Yeah. You know. Is that? Yeah.
Yes. So they are trying to bring the Lord on the same level as an ordinary human being. They think
just contaminated
by...
He may be a bigger one, just like demigods are bigger than us, but they still work by the mundane laws. So they're just applying the mundane laws that they perceive on him, though they don't understand he's the source of them. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that he being the source of the law, he's transcendental to the law. But the point is the law is simply a manifestation of how he likes things to work. So they're not understanding that personal aspect and all that. So yes, because it's the going up process, the ascending process.
Yes.
Huh? Aroha is ascending.
Yes, it is.
Yes, Aroha is ascending. Yeah, because I always thought it because you have Aroha, that's straightforward. Aviroha is then the other. So in the material, you take the going up as the main, and then, you know, in music, the going with the sty, and it goes up like that. And then you have the coming down, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So... they're all, it means all material philosophies are all arohapanta. They're all the path of ascending. Only Vaishnavas are technically aviroha, that it descends down from the Lord. Like that. But since he is the source, since he is actually the sa, you know, the original note, and all the other notes are expanding from there, so it's not technically. The point is just when we start with ourselves, then it has to come from God down to us. But if we start with God, then it comes from him and is expanded everywhere. Yes.
When we are niche devotee, sometimes we use the descending process and sometimes the ascending.
Yes. Yes, and then they clash in the middle instead of harmonize in the middle.
Yes.
The perfect blend of ascending and descending. Yes, I say. You know, at the perfect time in the summer, laying on the French Riviera with a mocktail, and then feeling that now you have the best of both worlds. You're a devotee and you have this. Yes. Like that. Like that. Because and from there, if you drank your mocktail with your left hand, no one's going to complain. So you can still chant with your right hand. Yeah? This objection, you know, of him absorbing the universe and he'll be tainted, is invalid because the Supreme Lord is transcendental. The objections raised by the atheistic Shankya philosophers against the Vedanta standpoint actually apply to their own position, wherein the Purusha is said to be inert, powerless, dependent upon the activities of Pradhan, which according to them is the only source of creation. So how would he absorb that? Because he couldn't, according to their philosophy. Does that make sense? And if he says according to our philosophy, then we just explain to how can he be? Because he's the one that he absorbs it, he then expands it. So he's in control of it, not that it's in control of him. But their philosophy is that the Purusha is dependent upon the Pradhan. Right? So Purusha is inert, powerless, and dependent. Right? So we really have a reverse here. So Pradhan is the active one. And the Purusha being the soul, then it's just their observing is controlled by the mode. So as soon as we give that up, you know, because in other words, the element that we're not the body, we're the soul, and the soul has desire. So they're catching that point of it. But then that means all things have to be being done by Pradhan, because they're not accepting that the Lord is the one who's arranging it. Right? So they actually reverse the masculine and feminine principle. And they call, in this case, the inert, powerless, dependent as masculine, as the Purusha, the controller, the enjoyer, like that, because that's what they want to be. But
since they're ascending, pretty much everything they do is reverse.
Yeah, everything's reverse. Now and again, you mean you get some things right, you may follow, because they'll follow some aspects of the Vedic culture, so in those aspects they're correct. you know, just like in the modern world, just people will, by their karma and the nature of being a soul, they'll, they may do things that are correct. But overall, it's not counted as descending. We can show where it is in the descending process, but they're utilizing it in ascending. So, mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't remember the Sanskrit, but there's that from the Veda. It says that the Supreme One, he desired and became many. Mm-hmm. So his desire rules everything.
Yes. That's, yes. That's it. That's, is that the Nityo Nityanam?
Eko Bahushyam.
Eko?
Eko Bahushyam.
Yeah.
Like that. So then that's what the Upanishad's pointing out. But because of the nature of it, the Upanishads, the obscure ways that it uses the terminology and everything like that, then people don't catch the essential points. They get caught up on the secondary. Hmm. And so they don't make connection between primary points. It's just like, let's say I'm making a main point, and then I get into the detail of that. Then I move on to the next natural, development of that main point. Then I give the detail. Now, I will look at it. These are two different details. I don't understand the connection there. So depending on which I like, I get into this detail. Someone gets into that detail. So therefore, in one discussion, people can come out with very different ideas and very different understanding of what they want to do, because they're looking at the secondary. While the Upanishads are giving secondary, but they're actually showing these connections. So like we were seeing in Chandogya, I think it's in the second chapter it's mentioning something, and then in the fourth chapter it's the next point. So it's in one discussion, actually you have to see everything in between those verses as in support of what's going on in those two verses. Mm-hmm. But because it's another verse, they take it out of the context of those verses, the main verses, and then apply their hypothesis or their mental speculation into how it supports what they want out of the philosophy. You know, like if you take Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, then you have to interpret all other aspects of the Gita according to that. Right? Is that you can't say, here Krishna says you have to do your duties, and so I'm doing my duties, and therefore, you know, I'm getting results, so why are you complaining that I'm not being devotional? Because Krishna has himself said you must do your duty. But the point is the duty has to be to please him. That's the meaning of Sarva Dharma. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're giving up all those dharmas for him. Mm-hmm. You know, the Akam, you know, Mom Akam, it's surrendered to him. But they're you can do your dharma, but not that you're not entitled to the fruits of action. That part they don't take. So that's why then the importance of understanding, you know, the philosophy from the viewpoint of the acharyas. That's why it's darshan. It's revealed. You know, darshan is not I'm seeing it, you know, as I see it. Darshan is as it's given to us. So, you know, it's like that point of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know, that devotee goes to see the Lord. No, you go so the Lord sees you. Yeah. Yes.
Would it be a good argument to say in simple words to them that you are conditioned by material nature, but not the Creator created?
Yes, that could work. You can point is just try anything. You try to get to essential points. The simpler you can keep it, the better. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, it's not that it can't be technical, but its presentation has to be simple. So that's the difference between having a little knowledge, expertise, and mastery. Does that make sense? So having a little knowledge means it's simple, but it's also not very, you know, how you say, it's not accommodating many elements, because we don't understand many elements. Expert means it accommodates a lot of elements, but you still don't necessarily see the essence of it.
Yes.
And so mastery is the essence. So we see when Prabhupada speaks, the acharyas speak, they speak the essence, and especially of all of them, Prabhupada is the one speaking the essence. It means they're all giving the essence. But, you know, because they're speaking on something much greater and they're giving the essence. then Prabhupada is taking that and making it even more essential in simple language into a context that we can relate to. Because if you'll notice in all these things is that no one says something outside of what Prabhupada does. They may give some detail of the secondary aspect. But the primary aspect of its connection to Krishna, it's about Krishna. There's no difference there. It's not that there's something more they're revealing that Prabhupada didn't. You know, there's sometimes that thought. But it's not, it's the same thing. But Prabhupada makes it so that we can understand. You know, he's saying it's just like Prabhupada uses exact words, you know exactly what he's saying, as you see that up to what he translated. And then after that, generally they'll keep to that kind of language, and now and again they'll use a fancier word. And then you're not quite sure of the context or why they'd use that. It's just like, have you in Krishna book, does it ever mention that Dvidvida showed his anus to the gopis? I mean, that really just blows the whole environment. It's a bunch of girls there. Is that that? Is that? Why would you use that? Prabhupada says the same thing. He shows his backside or things like that. You don't only have to show that. You don't have to get that. Otherwise, you know, they could have said sphincter, ani. They could have, you know, really gotten into something. But it's not, so it changes the flavor. So since you're describing girls and all that, you don't use that term. You know, if it was a bunch of boys, he was out there, you know, doing things with the cowherd boys, and you mention that, hey, you know, they'll just laugh. You know, cool. You know, but here's, so the flavor that's going on there, that's there, so that kind of essence, that's what's special and unique. Does that make sense? So you see now and again a word just kind of like sticks out. Well, with Prabhupada, no word sticks out in the translations and the purports, the word for perfectly blended, perfectly same flavor, same mood of presentation.
Seamless,
yeah, like that. But the point is because, as it says, it's in pursuance of what the acharyas say. So even if the word isn't, but we still know what it is and understand it in its context. And so it works. It's not a fault as such. But all I'm pointing out is that the position of Prabhupada, the expertise of Prabhupada, it's not that he can't use more words. You know, I mean, look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Even if you're educated, you need a dictionary to read his stuff. You know, like that. You know, so, you know.
Most of the times, normal dictionary don't work.
Yeah, no, you have to use one of those big, you have to use a collegiate dictionary. You know, those big, fat, got a few million words in it, dictionaries, those ones that you can't carry, those ones.
It's always very exact.
That's very exact and all that. So the point is that Prabhupada gets that exactness by the simple words and phrasing. You know, because you can use, because English, you know, originally was, you know, a Germanic, you know, sourced language, you know, okay, refined by the introduction of the French words and all that. But it's it's there, so the word can say an exact thing. But nowadays, it can still be quite exact, but not by the words used, but by a particular phrase or context. Like that. So it's an interesting language like that, is that it has a structure that you can flow and do things and you can get it. So Prabhupada's used that so nicely in a simple way that everybody can appreciate. But at the same time, it maintains the rasa, maintains the flavor that's there, maintains all these things. Rather than just this, you know, linguistic exactness. Because the point is all what's said, it's correct. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when there is a preacher, Mataji preaching, and they are teaching the essence, but they don't like the some secondary things like God or...
Yeah, then they should stay away from talking about those. It means, in other words, they can preach about the essence, about chanting, absorbing Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, doing everything you're doing in connection to Krishna and all that. And nicely, they should, since they don't agree with secondary aspects and they don't want to practice them, they have no right to talk on them either. In other words, everybody can preach, but stick to what you're qualified to preach on. So someone like that doesn't have faith in the scriptures in these areas, so they're unqualified to talk on them. So them giving their commentary in that is as Rupa Goswami says, a disturbance to society. Shruti Smriti Puranadi. Yeah, so in other words, it's a disturbance to society. Now they just want to talk on these things, because those are their opinions, and who cares about the individual opinions? It's about how the individual is going to bring their life in line with Krishna's service, not about their opinion on how everybody else should act or what's good or not. Right? In other words, the sick person is not the one to be giving the opinion on what's the medical cure, because if they were so smart, why are they sick? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that then they shouldn't speak on those things. You know, do what they like and this and that, but it's you don't like, you do what you want to do. But why is it, if you need to have everybody else do what you do to feel comfortable and secure, then that means you're an insecure person on the material platform. So why are you bothering everybody else with your insecurities? And then, but you're aggressively in your insecurities, that demanding that everyone else do what you do. So just stay away from it. That's all. Like that. And eventually they'll figure it out, because they don't like it. In the spiritual world, like it or not, the gopis cover their heads. No matter what any academic on the planet has to say about it. And the acharyas and the scriptures say it. They may not understand it. But that's the point. By intellect, you can't understand the scriptures. So it's just the way it goes, because is Krishna more powerful than everybody else? And how does he find fun? By being the most powerful? No, by being subservient. Right? So that's where the taste is. Okay? Yes or no? Okay. Are girls into taste?
Yes.
Right? If it has no taste, they don't do it. Boys will do it because it's effective, but they, girls won't. Right? Okay. Now, if the female nature is more powerful than the male masculine nature, where's the taste? By taking that subservient position. They're more powerful than men, but they take that subservient, that's where the taste is. And so people that go against that, they're just dry as a bone people. Impersonalists, heart like a desert, or whatever it is you want to use as the things. But the point is they don't understand how rasa works or how to get taste. And that's the exact thing. The people that have this, they take this up to try to gain taste, and the more they take it up, the less taste they get, the more nasty, the more aggressive they become. Because they're using a bogus position to try to get something, which you can't get.
And you said women are more powerful than men.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like a woman behind a powerful man.
No, it just means that they're Shakti. They make things happen. The guy's a bozo, right? Doesn't clip his nails, doesn't, do this and that, he could probably have a serious competition with a muskrat, all these kind of things could go on. And, life's fine. He can't do anything more, he can't take care of more, he can't do all that, but he comes in contact with a woman, and now all this improves, and now he has so much, he's doing so much more, all that's happening. Where does that come from? When we say it comes from there, it's because that greater power comes from. Prabhupada mentions it, and I think it's first canto or second canto. It's only mentioned once in all the Prabhupada's purports, because it's not something to emphasize. Like that. But the point is we're talking here, rasa, that's how it works. Just like if you take the contextual thing of the social thing, the man is superior to the woman, right? From that aspect. But then, where's the taste? Being subservient. Right? What does she want to do? What does she want to see done? How does she want to go about it? What does she, want to do?
So
that's where rasa is by subservience. But all this thing that it's me and about me, what's that last? I just saw advertised a new, I think it's older now, it's about 6 months or something, but it was a romantic comedy. But the title is something like, me first. like that, and that's never how they work. You know, it's been me first, so that even those are changing. You know, it's all about themselves. So the more we change like this, it's about me, the less you have relationship. The more it's about other people, then you have relationship. Relationship means how I'm interacting with you and you with me. But if it's about how you're going to interact with me, not how I'm going to interact with you, it's not actually personal. It's not relationship. So the point is using this bogus approach, then the whole thing falls apart. So therefore, you don't understand the Shastras. The part you don't understand, don't talk on. Talk on what you know. Right? Just like, let's say, I don't know how to cook sabji, but I know how to cook halava. I talk on halava. I don't talk on and philosophize on sabji. It's not my business. You know what I'm saying? So surrender to Krishna, that you understand, so that you talk on. The nature of women, men, social, all these things you don't know, then don't talk on them. Does that make sense? That's just the way it goes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.